So that mile and back squat wasn't the first goal I've ever had. I've had a lot of micro goals along the way and a lot of goals at different points in my life. And all of those goals and accomplishing those small goals, those all led me to the things that I'm doing now. I think you just need to start somewhere.
Hey, it's Ben Wise, and this is The Fitness Movement. The Fitness Movement is brought to you by Zur Fitness. Zur Fitness is my company and my platform to deliver training content to coaches and athletes like you. The site has educational resources on everything from program design and exercise physiology to skill progressions and movement breakdowns. And in terms of programming, we have our online training program, The Protocol, and I also offer one-on-one remote coaching. It's all at one place, zurfitness.com. Today, we have Adam Klink on the show, and I'm sure many of you will recognize his name because he completed that 456 mile run, 500 pound back squat, and 50 kipping pull-ups done in the same day. So obviously a good chunk of our conversation surrounds that topic, but Adam also has a really interesting path as an athlete up until that point, but also as a coach in the business space. So we actually started the conversation talking about Adam's athletic history, how he was a goalkeeper at Rutgers University, and how ultimately that he transitioned into CrossFit as both an athlete and coach. He competed at regionals six times. He's competed at a sanctional. He's competed at a semifinal. And during that whole time, he was the head coach and running the operations at CrossFit Krypton. And then we talk about how he went from being a sponsored athlete to actually working as the director of sponsorship at Bear Performance Nutrition. And I think Adam has a lot of really valuable insights to add as someone who's been on the athlete side of sponsorships and also is on the business side. Specifically, we talked about what companies are looking for in an athlete or influencer who they're potentially going to sponsor, and then also how you can get sponsored as an up-and-coming athlete. Adam's athletic career is pretty unique, and I had a ton of fun talking about it. So without further ado, let's get into this conversation with Adam Klink. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on. So I think a lot of people are going to recognize your name for a number of reasons. So I first want to kind of dive into, you know, your athletic background before we talk about the 500 pound squat, sub 5 minute mile and 50 pull-ups in a day. But before we get that little teaser, let's back up a little bit. It's probably 2013 when you went into your first regional competition in CrossFit. Still young. but on the day that you were supposed to graduate from Rutgers, instead of walking, you decide to go to regionals, compete in the Northeast region. And then basically the next day you drive back to Virginia and start working at CrossFit Krypton with Ben Smith. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. I was, and the backstory behind not walking is I was a fifth year senior because I redshirted my freshman year playing soccer at Rutgers. So it wasn't really the class that I came in with walking that year. So yeah. I was less invested than I probably would have if it was the year before. So it was for me, it was a no brainer. Like, I'll skip it. I'm going to go compete and see what I can do there.
Awesome. So take us back, like maybe, I don't know, 12, 18 months before that, walk us through what were you doing at that point? And then how did your life kind of switch to get you to the point where you're working at CrossFit Krypton with Ben?
Yeah. And I feel like that year of my life, I think the most changed out of anything, maybe up until this past year. But my whole life was high school and then college athletics. And like, I thought I was going to go play professional soccer. Like, that was my dream. I was coming up on my fourth year in college. I was the starting goalkeeper for the Rutgers men's soccer team. And I was like, I'm going to go to the combine, playing pro. Like, that was my plan. I didn't have a backup plan. If you asked me what my major was in school, it was soccer. So what happened was, early in that fourth year for me, I got two concussions back to back. I had a lot of concussions leading up to that throughout my whole high school and college career. And the fact that I got them so quickly back to back, there's what's called second impact syndrome. And when you get that second one so close to the first concussion, you can cause a lot more damage. And after meeting with a number of doctors, it was recommended to me that if I wanted to guarantee a quality of life, that I stopped playing contact sports. So literally everything that I had invested into my life, right, being soccer and sports and athletics, was then in an instant what felt like it was just ripped away from me. So those 12 months before, I literally went from my lowest of lows. Like, I remember being laid up on the couch, couldn't even watch TV because the lights hurt my head so bad. I was not doing classes. I was depressed. I wasn't able to work out. I'm sure like you, like, you need to work out every day. Like, it just boosts your mood. Like, I didn't even have that. So when I started to get healthy again, I started just getting into the gym and working out. And I think something that kind of held me accountable and provided some structure for myself was I fell into lifting with the Rutgers football team. I knew the strength coaches there very well. And being a goalkeeper, goalkeepers, when you get to the college level, are the more athletic ones on the team. So I did well in the weight room. And so they like accepted me as their own just to lift with the football team. And so I built a really good, it was an honor, right? But I built a really good base of strength. And I kind of feel like I added some grit into how I attacked working out. And through that, I was like, man, you know, like, I'm not ready to be done competing. And I needed to find something I could do, obviously, while not playing a contact sport. So I remember I had this friend, his name is Ben Smith. A lot of you guys might know who that is. But I went to high school with him. I graduated the same year as him. He played baseball. I played soccer and basketball. But then we both went our separate ways. But I kind of kept tabs on him. He would pop up from time to time. And throughout those years, he was competing in the CrossFit Games. And I was like, man, this interests me. This is just working out, but you can compete and you can make a name for yourself and you can win money. I was like, this is really cool.
Yeah.
So zero clue what, like, I had no clue what I was doing, but I knew that I knew how to work out. I knew that I knew how to work hard. So I wanted to try and learn this new sport, if you want to call it a sport. And I purely got into CrossFit to compete. Like, that was it. I wanted to fulfill my dream in being an athlete and being able to compete. So I found a local CrossFit box up in New Jersey at school, and I would train there at like 5-6 in the morning. Then I'd go help coach the soccer team, and then I'd go lift with the football team later. And again, really didn't know what I was doing. But back then, I would say it's a lot easier to make regionals than it is nowadays to make the semifinals.
Right.
And I think the Open came around, and the Open back in the day, it was nothing too technical. It was really more about work capacity.
Yeah.
And I had a decent work capacity, and I snuck in like 40th place in the region, and they took the top 44. So that is how I then landed a spot at regionals, traveling to the Northeast to compete there. But throughout that time, as the Open was going on, I went back home to Virginia and met up with Ben Smith, learned he was opening his gym, CrossFit Krypton. And while I was going through the Open and I was doing well in it, Ben sat me down. I would go home on the weekends to train at CrossFit Krypton. My family was there. My friends were there. I got to train with Ben. He said, what are you doing after college? And I said, I have zero clue right now. You know, so he said, I need some help. You want to come down and coach with me? And I said, sure. So I competed at regionals. And like you said, the next day I drove down to Virginia and I coached at CrossFit Gym Krypton for 8 years.
Wow. Yeah. Talk about a big shift in a short period of time. I mean, TBI, like concussions and stuff, it's like, it's so much different than like an orthopedic injury. Like, you know, I tore my ACL as a junior in high school, and that was like devastating for me because it like took away my sport, but it was like for 6 to 9 months of the recovery. It wasn't like this is gone and you can never have it back, which is what you got.
Yeah. It's tough. I learned very quickly that concussions aren't anything to play around with. I don't have a lot of side effects now. I do notice that when I'm overly tired, and maybe this is everybody, but I feel I'm going to attribute this to my concussions, but I like jumble up my words. I'll take like I take the first letter from the next word I'm speaking and slide it on to the word I'm actually speaking. And
yeah, I will do that on occasion as well.
Sure. So maybe that may or may not be from my concussions, but things like that. I've had concussions in high school where I lost my short-term memory for a period of time, like a couple months. I dropped out of school at one point because of a concussion. So yeah. And the thing that's scary is they don't have a ton of data. I think they're kind of just finding out now from like NFL players what that long-term damage looks like. And I think that's what doctors were most afraid of in my case, is like, yeah, you might be okay now, but like, we just don't know what this has done to your future. Right. So
yeah, you don't know what the residual impact is going to be for when you're 60, 70 years old. So
yeah, I told my wife, prepare yourself. I don't know if I'm going to be a vegetable by the time I'm 60 or not, but just warning you.
Oh boy. Something that only you can joke about.
I know, right?
Oh man, that's great. So yeah, let's fast forward a couple years, and you know, there's a little bit of buzz or talk around, you know, you basically prepping for this sub 5 minute mile, 500 pound back squat, 50 kipping pull-ups in a day. You know, I don't think there was really that much publicity around it until like you actually did. And people were like, "Whoa, wow, he actually did it." Before that, it was just sort of like murmurs. But before that, I mean, so kind of give us like the origin of like, where did these numbers come from? So, you know, I know that they were mentioned in like the CrossFit Level 1. So kind of walk us through like what the story was behind those numbers and why did you think that you'd be able to do it?
Sure. So for those of you that don't know, some of you know this who are heavily immersed in the CrossFit space, but anybody who takes their Level 1, they get the first seminar of the first day is what is CrossFit. And they speak about the CrossFit methodology and they explain how if you take both ends of the fitness spectrum, you can take the marathon runner who can run a 2 hour marathon, and they have a name for that person. And then they'll take the power lifter who can squat 1,000 pounds, and they explain and preach that as CrossFitters, we're not trying to get too far to either end of that spectrum. We're trying to meet that in the middle and be able to be competent in all areas of fitness. And we want to be able to run the 5 minute mile and hit the 500 pound back squat. And so that's kind of where like that concept originated. And this was back in probably 2008, 2010, like just that concept was thrown around. But the one thing was when they spoke about that in the seminar, they had a name for the runner. They had a name for the person who could squat that 1,000 pounds, but there was never a name of somebody who ran a 5 minute mile and squatted 500 pounds. So it's kind of this, like these like unicorn numbers. It was always kind of talked about, you kind of heard about it. And it really didn't pop up as like a challenge until 2018. Dave Castro released his book, Constructing the CrossFit Games. And it's like one page. It's like an excerpt of him talking to, I think it was like Scott Panchek or something. And they were debating whether any of the great games athletes there could run a 5 minute mile, squat 500 pounds in the same day if he was to put it out as a test. And I think he threw in 50 pull-ups to just like complete the triangle of the 550, 500. So it wasn't really an official challenge, but it was kind of, this is how it was like birthed into the world as a concept of like, of I guess a fitness challenge. So to answer your question, that's the origins. And it wasn't until COVID hit and we didn't have anything better to do that I actually focused in my training and attempted this.
COVID did a lot of funny things to a lot of people. Yeah. I'm glad it was positive for you and not picking up like drinking or something. Sure. So yeah, I mean, obviously you had to be super strong beforehand, but obviously you have to have a credible engine as well. You know, with you playing goalkeeper at Rutgers and, you know, kind of growing up, you were doing quite a bit of running. But then also you were lifting with the football team. So you're squatting a lot, lifting heavy and training for CrossFit for all those years. You've had like a lot of these different qualities under your belt. So kind of like walk us through your thought process. Like what were like the big things that you thought were going to be necessary for you to actually be able to do it?
Well, I think for me to even attempt the training to do this and think that I was going to be close, I attributed a lot of that to just my upbringing and how I trained previously, right? So my dad at an early age really instilled in me that like, if you want something, you work hard for it. Like nothing's given to you. So like that just mentality is what I carried through sports and everything else I did. I was never the most talented player on any team. I got to where I got a spot to play in college because I worked hard. So even in college, yes, I was a goalkeeper. Yes, goalkeepers have to be athletic and we have to pass fitness tests, right, to stay on the team just like a field player. But it was my mentality, even in college, that I wasn't just going to pass the fitness test. I was going to beat every single field player and I was going to win every single fitness test we have. So like that was my mindset. That's why I didn't start my freshman year, right? Talent wise, I wasn't better than the senior we had on the team, but I eventually earned a spot the next year because of my work ethic. So as a goalkeeper, no, we don't run a lot. However, I think I was maybe a little bit different than most goalkeepers. And like, this isn't a brag. This is just my mentality. I won every single fitness test I did for that soccer team those 4 years, because like that's what I prided myself on. Like if I was going to make a name for myself, I wanted to be known on the team as the guy that was going to bust his butt for the guy next to him, who was going to work harder than anybody else in the room. So I built up a really good base of endurance in my college years. I ran a 4:56 mile in high school for a fitness test. So when I was 16 years old, I broke a 5-minute mile. Then I lifted with the football team. I trained at Krypton, and something that Ben Smith has done his whole career, we squat a minimum of twice a week. And I remember I went in the Krypton, and when the first time I ever tested my back squat at Krypton, I think I hit 424. It was like 415 or 425, maybe. That was my max. And I want everybody to know in this 500-pound squat and this mile that I didn't just have a 500-pound squat. It literally took me from ages 21 to 26 to build up to a 500-pound back squat. That's 5 years to put on that much strength. So when I was 26 years old was the first time I hit a 500-pound back squat. So with all that being said, when this challenge came out, I felt that I just had this rare combination of having endurance, but also having some solid leg strength for the endurance that I had. Like, again, everybody is like one side or the other of that spectrum. But I think it was just a combination of like just being a soccer player. It was very lower body focused. Again, at Krypton, we just put a lot of emphasis on leg strength. We felt like that was like the foundation and building blocks of literally all other movements in CrossFit. I don't think there are too many secrets. I think the important thing for everybody to note is like, I didn't just train 10 weeks to accomplish this, right?
Give me your 10-week program and then I'll be able to do what you did.
Yeah. Right. And you know what? The funny thing is when I tackled that squat and running, everybody wanted to know what I did.
Right.
Which is why I made an ebook. And I literally wrote, so when I did this, I wrote down every single running workout, every single squat or session. But I want people to know that in doing that training plan, I'm diligent in letting people know like, hey, your numbers aren't going to be my numbers. I want you to see where your starting point is and set an attainable goal for 10 weeks, a realistic goal that you can work towards. And whether it's putting 20 pounds on your squat and shaving 30 seconds off your mile, like that's a win, right? And for me, like that's kind of what it was. When I tested at the beginning, I hit a 485 squat and ran a 544 mile. So cool. I put on 15 pounds on my squat and I shaved 44 seconds on my mile. Like, you know, it's all relative. But I I think it's very, very difficult for somebody to put on, if you're far off, that much strength in a short, I consider 10, 12 weeks a short period of time.
Yeah.
I think it's a little easier to shave a minute off your mile and build that endurance. But strength takes a long time, man. You know, I know you know that, yeah. But I think not everybody does.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think, you know, just the time aspect of training is something that people don't value enough. Like, you just got to put in your reps and, you know, allow the course of multiple cycles to kind of build on each other and allow that adaptation to take place. And like, just like you're saying, like, this is something that, you know, you weren't necessarily having 500 and sub 5 minute mile in your mind for the last 10 years, but you had, I want to be as strong as I possibly can be. And prior to that, it was like, I want to be crushing all the fitness tests. And basically these were both like a 10 year lead up to this event that you didn't know was going to exist down the road.
It's 100% right. It's very true. And again, those are the things that led to me even thinking that I could accomplish anything like that.
Right. I mean, certainly if you probably didn't have the skills where you knew that you wouldn't get close, you would have picked something else. Like, it was a unique circumstance where you were uniquely qualified to be able to crush this test and sort of make a name for yourself as a result.
Yeah. And it's funny you say make a name for yourself. Like, I literally didn't do it for any other reason other than I am a very goal oriented person. And when COVID hit and there was no, my competitions got canceled, my sanctional got canceled, I was like, man, what do I do? Like, I'm not the kind of person that just like goes to the gym or goes in the garage to work out to look good. Like, I always believe the look side, the aesthetics come as a byproduct of working towards another goal. And that's just how I've always operated. So I was like, well, I guess this is my next goal. And it blew up more than I ever could have imagined.
Yeah. I mean, like I said before, I mean, I think that does speak to you and your character. Like, this wasn't something where it's like the, you know, the sub 2 hour marathon where it's like, you know, everyone's going to go nuts when the guy runs that. Like, there was definitely, again, like those murmurs about it, but it wasn't like something that like really took off until afterwards. And then like all of a sudden you've had a lot of opportunities that you wouldn't have foreseen that popped up as a result of that, which is just incredible, obviously.
It's actually really wild. And I think that's literally a main driving reason as to why I am where I am now at BPN. I mean, that's really kind of the reason they signed me as an athlete as a time.
Right.
Because I like fit the mold of kind of the athletes that they cater to. But yeah, it was wild, man. I think the first like big thing I put out about any of that was 2 weeks before I hit it. I put out a YouTube video just because I wanted to, I was like, if I'm going to do this, I need to document this well, so people believe that I did it.
Right.
So I essentially did like a 90% effort mile, and then I hit a max back squat, and I just practiced the filming. I had the guy ran the first and last lap with us and just had the camera the other time. And we figured out, oh, we should probably get a bike and ride behind me. But that was really like the first like big murmur that I put out that I was close. I think I hit a 5:12 mile and hit the 500 pound back squat. And then 2 weeks later, I felt like I was ready.
Yeah. So if I'm understanding correctly, you actually made sort of two pushes for this. And the first one, you didn't actually get to kind of go through your whole buildup because you had plantar fasciitis, which is basically like inflammation in the bottom of your foot. Super painful and basically kind of, you know, cut your training short. In hindsight, is there anything where maybe what went wrong with that first buildup?
Yeah, I know exactly what went wrong. I'm not a small human. I'm not a light individual. I usually competed at 215, 220 pounds during the CrossFit season. And like mid season, I was like, oh, let's just run, have the back squat. Let's just try to, you know, dial in my running and tackle this 500 pound squat and the mile. And this was in 2018, like shortly after it came out in the book. And I was like, I can do this. I'm just going to go all in and do it. But I didn't really alter my training. But essentially I put in too much volume running. And I know that sounds crazy, because if you talk to a runner, they're like, best way to get better at running is to run more and run long, slow miles. To a sense, I think running a timed mile, which is in a runner's world a sprint, is very different than working towards 5K, half marathon, marathon, those, that sort of mileage. So I went out and I was kind of doing more longer runs, doing some interval work, but too many miles. So when I attempted this a second time, I was like, all right, I need to do something where I'm not going to put that volume in where I'm going to injure my foot. So I was maybe only running 8 to 10 miles a week to train for this. However, 90% of those miles were at 5 minute pace and below. Between the intervals I was doing, the track workouts, they were all at that pace. So when I stepped on the line to run that 5 minute mile, I knew exactly what a 5 minute per mile pace felt like, and I could just hold it. It was more just a matter of me building up the endurance for a 5 minute window to hold on to that pace.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think some of the dangers, like as a CrossFit athlete, you know, there's a lot of CrossFit athletes who have, you know, their endurance coach and their gymnastics coach. And at the end of the day, sometimes if those people haven't worked with CrossFitters before, or like someone who's like you, they can, you know, probably do more harm than good sometimes. For example, like, I don't know if you worked with a running coach at all, but it'd be really easy for a running coach to be like, hey, I need you to run this many miles per week. Like, I've gotten runners to a 5 minute mile before or sub. So, you know, we need you to get you here. And they're like, well, I'm a 215, 220 pound guy and I have this frame and you're still asking me to run this mileage. Like, it's just not going to work. So, yeah, and, I mean, did you have that experience?
So yes, I did have a running coach. He ran cross country for Virginia Tech, and he knew exactly what I was trying to do. And I sat down and talked to him before I started to train for this again. And I was like, look, like, I understand that you need to put in miles to become a better runner. I'm not necessarily trying to become a better runner. I'm just trying to run a mile in 5 minutes. So like, what kind of game plan can we come up so that I don't injure myself again? Because too, like, when working with a CrossFitter, you're not just running in your training. You throw in double unders and box jumps and Olympic lifts where you're dropping and landing and throwing a 500 pounds on your back, you know, every other week, and all of that compounding on your joints and your ankles and your feet, like, it adds up. So it's not just the running you have to think about.
Yeah. I think everybody like likes to think about your, again, like your quote engine, like you have to have the aerobic power to do it, which is true. But like, you know, if your joints can't tolerate the volume or the amount of work that's necessary for it to get there, you're like, the wheels are going to fall off before you ever get to test.
Exactly. And that's essentially what happened to me when I tried to do it the first time. I was more just naive going into the whole thing, and it was just kind of a wear and tear injury.
I mean, you could say that, but also, like, you know, there's really no one who's done what you did before. Yeah. So, I mean, you're trying to follow as close as you can to that script. So, like, yeah, it makes sense too. So, I mean, give yourself a little bit of credit. but okay. So round number two, was that during COVID?
Yes.
The second time around. Okay. So the second time you go about it, you're focusing way more on like the power end of the spectrum and trying to really, you know, keep the mileage a lot lower and really drive the intensity.
And focus on the intensity, right? Yep.
Yeah. Were a lot of those, you said like a lot of your volume was at race pace or faster. Like, take us through, like, what did maybe some of those intervals look like on like a typical training day in the middle of that cycle?
Yeah. So, it was a very standard template that I followed. So I ran Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and one of those runs was a 20 to 25 minute easy run with a couple strides afterwards. The other workout would be a road interval workout, one that I could go in my neighborhood or in the neighborhood around the gym. And it would be something like 8 rounds of a minute at 5 minute at mile pace, and then 2 minute easy recovery jog, 8 rounds. So 8 minutes at that mile pace, you know what I'm saying? So the volume was not high. The intensity was very high. Track workout, I did a variety of them. It would have looked something like a combination of really like 600s, 400s, and 200s. I think I ran an 800 two or three times, like a timed 800 two or three times, but I really wasn't going past that. But then we played with, as we went those track workouts, we played with the rest and trying to recover. So, you know, the rest time between 400s would get shorter and shorter. So yes, I was getting a little recovery, but can I now turn around and run another 400 at that 5 minute pace or below? But again, like it was like a mile and a half of hard running, 2 miles max at that race pace. And like, that was the track workout.
Yeah. I mean, you've had so many, like your training age is really deep at this point. So again, I think a lot of people are going to be listening and maybe projecting what you're doing and thinking about their own training. I mean, again, you have all of this background, all of this, you know, training history of all these things that you've accumulated over the years. And that's what's really allowing you to be like, okay, over the next 10 weeks, I'm basically just getting that and sharpening it as much as I possibly can to try to express for this one specific test. And the other cool thing about this is that, like, you know, with something like this versus like if you go compete in regionals or a semifinal event, you get to pick when you do it. Like, yeah, you're running a 10-week progression, but if you feel like you can crush it on week 8, you don't have to go the full 10 weeks. And I think, is that what happened?
Yeah. So I was going to go 12 weeks and I felt good 10 weeks.
Okay.
10 weeks. I went for it.
Yeah. How did you make that call?
I knew that I was, when I did that test at 8 weeks, I was 12 seconds off and I hit the squat. My body was it's a combination of, I was in like the sweet spot where my body was feeling really good. However, I was starting to feel some things flare up. And I knew that if I went another 2 weeks, there was a chance that I would start to run myself into injury and go backwards. As far as my health, I was feeling good. I mean, having a kid, I don't know if you have kids or not, but
recently had one actually.
Oh, dude. Well, congratulations. Well,
Thank you. You
will soon learn that like every 6 weeks you're sick because of your child. And then we have two, it's like every 3 weeks you're sick. So again, my body felt good. I felt like I had done everything I could on the nutrition side. I kind of made the call like the day before. I was like, I'm going to do it tomorrow. I felt well fueled. And yeah, I just felt like there was no point in dragging it out any longer, and that I was giving myself the best opportunity to give it my best effort.
Yeah, when you know, you know.
Yeah.
And again, I imagine that, you know, thinking about people training and training hard and doing all these really tough, you know, intervals and starting to build to this time trial, like a training, you know, a 90%, 95% effort in training as you're doing a time trial for a mile is completely different than when you lay it out there and sell your soul for a sub 5 minute mile. Were you still confident that you could hit the squat after that?
Yeah. And so one, I think a back squat is my favorite movement, and people can just look at a back squat and like, oh, that's a simple movement. But being a coach, like I find beauty in movement and moving well. And I like prided myself on making my back squat as perfect as possible. So I've squatted a lot. And with that, as I got close, so probably when I was like 7 weeks into training, every Friday after my hard track session, I'd hit 500 pounds just mentally to be confident. I'm like, yeah. I can hit it. So I knew that if I could tackle the mile, which is why I did the mile first, put all my energy and effort into that in the morning. I knew if I did that, I could recover enough and hit that back squat. Cause I had somewhat tested that for like 3 weeks leading up to that. And I was very confident.
That's incredible. No small feat. And as I said, like there's a lot of opportunities that came up because of that. One of them, as you're sitting there with the BPN hat on, is working with them. So basically they signed you as an athlete, and you know, you went out to Texas to basically meet the team and, you know, check it out and do some workouts. And then you got a call 2 days later and basically was asking, like, Nick, the CEO and founder, was basically asking if you, you know, what was your price tag to basically join the company? Is that how the story goes?
Exactly how it went. I had zero intention of leaving CrossFit Krypton. It wasn't even on my radar to work with BPN. I had gotten signed as an athlete. You know, maybe the month before. And I was just ecstatic to be an athlete and to be visiting BPN, and they were taking care of me really well. And I was like, man, like, this is awesome. You know, I obviously really aligned with their mindset. Kind of at that point in my career too, when you're early on, especially as a CrossFit athlete, you kind of like take piece by piece everything you can get to support yourself sponsor wise. But
yeah,
I had been with companies in the past, and I had kind of just gotten to the point where, like, you know what, I just want to align myself with the right people and build that brand recognition and build good relationships and just let those relationships flourish from there. So I say all that to say that from a relationship perspective, it was everything I wanted in a supplement sponsor or a sponsor in general. I wanted to have a long-term relationship with them. So, you know, when I got that contract, I was ecstatic. And it's funny, when you sign a, you know, a 1-year contract, immediately I have thoughts like, man, crap, what happens after a year, you know? But anyways, I went down, worked out with Nick and the team, got some content, loved it in Austin. And yeah, 2 days later, Nick asked what my price tag was, and they didn't have a position for me at the time. They didn't know where they were going to put me. Nick always says that he's always going to hire the right people and we'll find the right spot for them. And he's told me since then that the reason I'm here is because of my relationship building skills and my people skills that I attribute to working at a gym for so long. When you work at a gym with 200, 300, 400 people, and you have people from all walks of life and all different personalities and all different issues in a sense, right? Like a gym is like a hospital, you know, it's for people that need help. You learn how to almost be a chameleon, to mesh with anybody, to relate to everybody. And that was something that I think he felt like he needed in the company. And at first, the thought was that I was going to be like their training guru, put out workout tips and videos and things like that. But it quickly evolved. And I say quickly, it was like 3 months. It evolved into offering me the position of their partnership manager and building those relationships for the company.
Yeah. So this is a super interesting position, and I want to dive into it a little bit more. You know, again, a lot of people listening are either coaches or athletes. And, you know, one of the things that gets talked about all the time is sponsorships, and very few people have the place where they should actually be talking about them, including myself. So I'm going to go to you as the expert, or, you know, at least someone who's got more perspective than I do. So I guess, first of all, you know, you do at least some like searching for athletes who could be potential sponsors and things like. What do you look for in an athlete who could be a potential sponsor?
That's a very loaded question, because I think there's a lot that goes into it. I'll preface this as I'm super protective of the brand. And I think you have to be when you're in this position. There's probably different mindsets in going about working with athletes and influencers. And we have an ambassador team as well. Some take the approach where like, let's just get as many people as we can, slap them with these discount codes so they advertise for us and they bring money into the company. And there's like not a ton of control or relationships built. And it's just kind of like, seems like it's thrown out there, and it's like anybody and everybody can be a part of this company.
Yeah. We're both smirking. Nobody likes those companies.
Yeah. And I've seen those companies like live and die. I think BPN really prides themselves on how we take care of people just in general, not even just our athletes, but just how we treat and take care of people. So to answer your question, what I look for is people who genuinely want to grow with the brand and aren't necessarily just looking for like a quick buck to make. Everybody we have with us is so invested and bleeds the same mindset and mentality that we have and wants nothing more than the brand to succeed. And that they know that if the brand succeeds, they succeed. In terms of like, they're almost like intangibles, but just like personality, how they treat people. You know, for example, if you didn't, all these people, if they didn't play their sport or have the platform that they did, they're what they bring just as people, I would want them as the brand, regardless of if they were playing their perspective sport or not. So very heavy on the relationship side. Now I say all that, there are things that I do have to look for in terms of, like, you know, if we're investing in an athlete, an influencer, an ambassador, we obviously are going to look for things in return. Now I view that as, if I take care of those athletes, they're going to take care of us. I've always operated, treat people well, they're going to treat you well back in return. However, you know, we obviously do want them to have a good following, a good influence. And when I say following, everybody immediately jumps to Instagram followers. And that's not the case. I will gladly take somebody that has 90,000 followers over somebody that has 1 million followers. And it's due to their engagement and the, I guess, advice, the education, what they're putting out to their followers. If you can provide something of value to the people that follow you, you're invaluable. It's a hard thing to do, because when you get into the athlete world, you look at somebody's following and people have a lot of fans, especially in like the major sport markets, right? They have a lot of fans. It's hard to have true followers, people that come to you for advice. They follow you for inspiration and motivation, right? Like, I'm a fan of Tom Brady. I'm not a follower of Tom Brady, right? I'm a follower. Yeah. I'm a follower of Ben Smith. Ben Smith tells me to do something, I'll do it. You know, there's a difference there. And I, from my seat, I can see that very clearly, because when we talk in terms of working with people, it's obviously to help advertise the brand. I mean, black and white, like, that's what the partnerships are, right? Like, we help support the athlete's mission. We help fuel them. We help them try to win at what they're doing and assist and aid in that however we can, whether it be financially or through product and nutrition or through whatever it is, media content. But at the end of the day, like, we're partnered with these people to help us grow. Right. And I have worked with athletes with 2 million followers, and I've worked with athletes with 10,000 followers. And I have a very specific example of, I had a 2 million and a 10,000, and the person with 10,000 followers sold 5 times as much product as the person with 2 million followers. Yeah. Just wasn't the right audience. It was just people were fans of this person, as opposed to this athlete with 10,000 followers, a professional triathlete and a coach of a big program. And you got people coming to her for advice for everything. So,
yeah,
a little bit of a loaded question, but there's a lot that goes into what I look for.
Yeah. I mean, I think bottom line is, like, if you're someone listening and you're trying to navigate or maybe aspire to have a sponsorship one day, is you have to understand what the companies want. It's like, they want someone who represents their brand well and isn't going to be going and doing something ridiculous or posting something ridiculous and the brand's associated with that ridiculous thing. Like, yeah, that's a liability to your company. Nobody wants that type of athlete. And then also, you have to realize that if you actually want to be able to, you know, have that person stick around as a sponsor, like, you also have to deliver in terms of, like, helping them build their company. And that means sales for most people. So it's like, I think you just need to understand the landscape and the dynamics of what's going on if you're someone who is trying to get into and navigate that world.
Yeah. And my best advice to anybody who's trying to pick up sponsors, anything of that nature, is diversify yourself and build a personality that's relatable to your audience. And when I say audience, I'm talking about people in person, people online, but the people who do the best for companies are the people who, in their own communities, are doing a whole lot, whether they're coaching, whether they're, I don't know, there's a lot of examples. They have a good following on social media. They're engaged with their followers. People ask them a question, they answer them back. I know that takes time and effort. They have maybe a YouTube channel. So funny, YouTube channel, your YouTube is where it's at in terms of advertising. And especially if you're like an influencer, people think Instagram is like the shiny object, where, you know, you
get like 5 seconds on Instagram.
Yeah. But lucky. People only see a glimpse, like, right. Like you right. can share a whole lot more of your life and deeper insights through YouTube. And that long-term payoff is exponentially higher than Instagram. So I challenge people to diversify their self in their reach and the content they're putting out. And I say this knowing, like, I know it's hard. I know that you get to a point where you almost need like a media team to help you deliver content. And that's why it's like the people that we want to work with in terms of like our big athletes, things like that, like they're more few and far between than you actually think. I mean, like, yes, there's a ton of NFL players and players in the NBA and golfer, but like they don't have the complete package. I think that complete package is a lot fewer than you think it is.
Yeah. If you had to guess a number of elite CrossFit athletes who could not coach any hours, who could just get sponsorships and have a full-time job that's actually enough to pay the bills and, you know, have a little bit of wiggle room, how many is that?
20.
Yeah. I would have said 10, but yeah, I think it is probably 20 by now. Okay.
Yeah. That I've built up where they can kind of just rely on sponsors and social media. It's and to your point, yeah, that's right. I could have said 10 and I could have named those 10. I could maybe dive as deep as 20, but it takes a lot of work. And the point is CrossFit is really moving towards it being a professional sport.
Right.
And that's the tough part. It's like sponsors want you to promote their product. However, if you're treating it like a professional sport, you need to put the time in the training. And like, I also view the people we work with as influencers and professional athletes. And you almost have to view them separately, right? Your influencers, their livelihood and their main job is sales, right? They're salespeople essentially, and they're selling product. And that is literally how they make their living. And they're very good at that. They put time, I mean, their whole day is usually planned out about making content to make money to, and so forth. A professional athlete, a little bit different, probably a lot of bit different. They've dedicated their whole life to their craft to build up that credibility to be where they are. I mean, like, you can't argue that Ben Smith won the CrossFit game. He put in the work and he earned that title of the fittest man on earth, and nobody can take that away from him. And there's a credibility about somebody like Ben Smith that you can never take away. Now, to get there, Ben does not have the time to put into constant media. So I can't expect him to sell as much as an athlete of mine who's more on the influencer side. I just can't. Like, the reality of it is it's tough. And I think, to your point, I think those like CrossFitters who are influencers.
Yeah.
Three.
Yeah. I mean, we all know their names.
Three people, right? And somebody who's done an exceptional job of that over the years is Noah Olsen. I love Noah. And I think he's done an amazing job of blending, being relatable, putting valuable content out to his followers, and still having the time to work hard and be credible in his sport. I could maybe name two more people who have gotten to that level like he has.
Yeah. And even I think, I don't know this, but I think he probably got some good advice early on about like, hey, you know, freelance somebody to do your YouTube videos for you, or eventually hire somebody to do them for you. And it's like, he could still focus on his training, and then it allows him to also really start to build a following, in the sense that people are actually feel like they're connected with him and will, you know, if he endorses something, they consider it to be legit because he doesn't, you know, he's honest with them and like, he doesn't use them. So again, I think all of that, the nurturing of those aspects, is something that has to happen long-term for someone who does want to get real sponsors down the road. So you'd probably recommend, you know, an athlete who wants to be up and coming, maybe it's like, hey, be real, have a real personality, like have values that you stand for, start to build, you know, some sort of a following in terms of, you know, maybe social media, maybe it's YouTube, like find your thing and start to grow it. Is that where you would say?
Yeah. And like for me personally, I found my niche when I hit that mile and back squat. Again, blew up way more than it should. I leaned into running. Like people wanted track workouts. People wanted that high intensity run training. And the thing that worked for me is it's so accessible. People can literally walk out their door and go run.
And great timing with COVID and everything too.
Right. Like it, again, I don't think it would have blown up the way it did if competitions were going on and we weren't in COVID. I think what Glassman had just gotten fired. We were in COVID and like, it was the first thing that
really needed a boost.
And it was the first thing for CrossFitters who were like, look at what we've done. We've done something good. And yes. You know, it was just like, it was good timing, but I think people need to find like what their niche is. And it's hard as CrossFitters because you're trying to be good at everything, but you need to like find something that's yours that separates you and start to build that platform. And again, it doesn't happen overnight, right? Like you're not necessarily going to have overnight success with it. It takes a long time, for example, to build up a YouTube following, to build a social media following, but I guarantee you, you're going to build a much truer following through social media instead of posting a picture of you're working out and saying Monday, time to grind. If you actually put out advice or content or your thoughts for the day, like people are interested in those sort of things. Like it's like your fans will like a picture of you working out because they think you're cool and you're good at what you do, but like you won't hold them for life, you know?
Yeah. I think
it's tough, man. It's tough.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I think it doesn't get talked about near enough. And, you know, I think for a lot of people, like the landscape is changing too in the sport. So it's like originally when you got into CrossFit, you could start off. And if you're a good athlete, like you were, you could get to regionals your first year. Like if someone enters now, unless they are the 0.0001%, they're not going to make it to a semifinal the first year. Like it's just not going to happen. So like initially there was like, you could get in if you were just a good athlete and you could work hard. And within a couple of years, you'd be kind of growing along with the sport and you could get into a high level. And now it's like, man, that's really hard to do. It's just like be self-made like that. So it's like to be able to work hard enough where you can actually get into like a decent position. Plus, you know, actually keep a job while you're doing that because you have to pay yourself because you're not a professional athlete. Doing both of those at the same time is very hard.
It's a no-win situation for people right now. And I think really the only people who it seems like are like breaking into the scene are those people who are like teens who now are falling into they're out of the teenage division and hopping in the regular division. And like, they've literally never had a real job. They were so good from the beginning that they just kind of kept it going in a sense. You might find like a college athlete who has an extensive background in like swimming or gymnastics or something of that nature that just like sets them miles ahead of the field. And with a little bit of work, they can break in a year or two.
Like a Chandler Smith. So,
but man, the hardest part is taking your average person who likes to work out and thinking they have a chance of making the CrossFit Games. Again, it's this vicious circle where you need to support yourself. So if you want to go all in on CrossFit, you need to have the time to train because realistically these guys are training 4 to 6 hours a day, which to me now sounds insane. Like, I don't know if I ever trained that many hours a day. And so you need to have sponsors to support that. So you don't have to have a job. Well, you can't get sponsors until you reach that level in the first place. So the people who got in early and picked up some good sponsors right off the bat, they were kind of in those like golden years where it just fell into place really nicely for them.
Yeah.
And allowed them to chase excellence in the sport. Way, way harder to do that now. And even myself, like, you know, I was in an environment where I had a full-time job. We'll call it a full-time job, but I was the head coach of Ben's gym and I coached anywhere from 4 to 6 hours a day, plus did back-end stuff. So I still had a job. And for me, I heavily valued the fact that the Smiths trusted me to run and manage their gym. So I was going to put all of my effort into that. And I always told myself, with whatever left I have for the day, I'll put into my training. Sometimes it was an hour, sometimes it was two. If I was lucky, it was 3 hours a day that I would get to train. But I look at that, and then I look at my life now, my job now, and I work from 8 to 4:30, and like, I didn't compete this year because I knew that I couldn't put the time into training that I needed. I always told myself that I would go as far in competition as I could while still maintaining my job and career at the gym. So could I have made the games? I don't know. Maybe. I'd come pretty close in a regionals or two. I got like seventh. I was two spots out. If I set aside time and didn't have a job and could put it in the extra training, could I have made it? Maybe. But like, to me, that's not fulfilling. And so it is a really tough balance of trying to figure out how to support yourself while trying to chase a dream like that. And because too, like, I think sometimes people aren't super realistic with themselves and where they need to go. And like, people don't understand how good you have to be 30th place, last place at semifinals. And then you don't know how good you have to be 10th place. And then how much better you have to be to make the top five. Like even the separation at semifinals between the top five and the bottom five is astronomical. And you know, I don't think people realize that either. You're not going to blow up by making semifinals too. Like, you know, you don't make your name for yourself at semifinals or regionals.
Yeah. It's really easy to put, you know, basically your entire life on hold and like cut everything else out, full-time athlete for a couple of years and still like make it to a semifinal, which you're like way into the smallest minority of the sport already. Like you're so good at that point. And yet nobody knows who you are and you're never going to be able to get sponsors because you haven't built those relationships. Like, yeah, it's a really rare instance where someone can put it all together at this point.
Dude, some of my first sponsors were, I got a couple free shirts a month from a clothing company, FitAid, their sponsorship. They used to send me a case of FitAid every month. These are probably my first like 2 years competing. I think I was sponsored by a jump rope company and I got a couple free jump ropes and they gave me $100 travel money to my next regionals. Like that was, as a person who made regionals at the time, like that was the support you got. Like I'm not paying any bills with any of the sponsors that I
jump rope,
you know, like, yeah.
So like in hindsight, do you think you would still take on a lot of the same opportunities that came up? Like is going through the energy of talking with the company for a couple free t-shirts worth it in the long run? Or like, did that help you figure out how to negotiate more serious contracts down the road?
I think it had its place, in that point in time. For the little credibility that I had, I think it like slowly built some credibility, it built some exposure and awareness through other brands. It also made me appreciate when I did get some bigger stuff down the road. It was like, it always gave me something to work for. And like, yeah, it was cool to get some free stuff, but it, at the same time, I think kept me a little bit more on the humble side. Like, I think that was also a product of like being next to Ben and Alex Smith my whole career, you know, and seeing things that they've attained, and they were awarded through partnerships and sponsorships. And I was always like, oh, this is what they're offering me for the work I've been putting in. I need to get to this level. But no, I mean, all the contracts, I mean, it gave me like a base knowledge of how the world works. Definitely helped my position now. But man, we're entering into some uncharted territory with just the size of the company, the growth, and how we go about our marketing. Like a year ago when I got this job, I'm leaving the days of like a general contract. We'll pay you this for this and we'll take care of you. Like, yes, a contract was signed, but it was a little bit more of like a handshake. Like, let's just be good to each other and see where this goes. And now it's very much more like strategic marketing and like literally having different people market different products and using people for this campaign and for, you know, it's way more, there's way more depth to what I do now than I ever thought there was. So definitely seeking out, you know, mentors and people to learn from who have been there as we kind of enter into these uncharted waters for us.
Yeah. So sitting on your side of the table where you're at now, you know, working for a company, and you've been on the other side, do you have any advice for athletes who are potentially negotiating contracts?
I would say at the end of the day, you need to pick companies that align with your values. And in my opinion, aligning with the right companies in the long run is more important than necessarily a higher dollar amount for like a quick grab of something. I think it takes a lifetime to build your reputation and you can lose it in an instant. And I think that's my best piece of advice. And I think that's what people need to hear is you spend your whole life trying to build your reputation. And it can be gone very quickly. And the people you surround yourself with can have a big influence on that.
Yeah. If you pick the right company, like selling, so to speak, it should be like pretty effortless. Mm-hmm. Like if you really believe in something, like you're probably people listening right now, like you're selling for something, like whether you realize it or not, right? Like you walk in, you're wearing a Rogue t-shirt, you like Rogue, you know, you're marketing their brand for them.
You're right? always representing something. I have a Yeti shirt on, right? Like I love Yeti. Of course, I'll wear a Yeti shirt. They're great people. I know them personally, like absolutely. But that goes for everything you do.
Yeah. So I think exactly like you said, like it's really easy to, you know, see some cash and want to grab it and run and then kind of, you know, tarnish your name as a result, your reputation as a result of that in the public image, because people are critical of stuff you do online too. So, you know, just because you've got someone who's a faithful follower doesn't mean that, you know, if you put out the wrong thing that gives them the, you know, a bad smell somehow that they're not going to turn on you. I think that's probably a valuable lesson.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Final question for you here. One of the things I've heard you say, I have a quote here. It says, training with no goal was one of my least favorite periods in my life. I've always said that there's like no such thing as like GPP athletes. Like everyone's got a goal. You just got to figure out what the goal is, right? There are no just like general goals, right? If that's the case, you need to talk with the person. So, you know, I think people listening, they might not be competitive, but they have some sort of goal in fitness. And, you know, I think a lot of people see someone like you and they're like, man, I would never be able to do the things you did. You know, I'm not even really sure if I can achieve that, you know, this goal that I have. If someone like that came to you and they're like, hey, Adam, like, you know, I've seen you do all this stuff. Like, I'm really struggling with this goal. I don't know if I can really accomplish it. What would you say to that person?
So that mile and back squat wasn't the first goal I've ever had. I've had a lot of micro goals along the way and a lot of goals at different points in my life. And all of those goals and accomplishing those small goals and those all led me to the things that I'm doing now. I think you just need to start somewhere. A great example of that is my wife, Shay. She's had two babies now. And her goal, a year postpartum now, her goal was to run a half marathon. Never run one in her life, just set a goal for herself. Is it that challenging? Tons of people run half marathons. You can walk a half marathon, you know what I'm saying? But it was something small that she just wanted to do for herself to prove to herself that she could do it. She's gotten in the best shape of her life while training for this half marathon. Now she wants to run a full marathon. And in August, she's going to pace me for 10, 20 miles in Leadville. And now she's doing things that a year ago, she never even thought of. I mean, she couldn't even think of running 2 or 3 miles, you know, after having her second child. And now she's whipping out 15 miles at a 7-minute pace and I can't even keep up with her. Like it's crazy, but you got to start somewhere. You got to take the first step and it's never too late to start. You just have to start with an attainable goal, right? Like if you've never been in the waters of running even a 6-minute mile, your goal should not be to run a 5-minute mile. The only reason why I thought I could run a 5-minute mile and hit a 500-pound back squat is because I've been there before. I've done both of those. I've experienced those before. And that's why putting those both together was something that I thought that I could attain. I think you need to set goals to build experiences to then set even bigger goals. And it's kind of like this snowball effect that after you start setting, I call them micro goals. Like a micro goal might be something that you can accomplish in a few weeks or a few months. But after you start getting some momentum in accomplishing micro goal after micro goal after micro goal, you look back and, well, crap, you're halfway towards this bigger goal that you set and you're way further than you ever were before. But it's just a matter of starting and not looking so far off into the distance, but looking at the step ahead of you first.
It's great advice, man. Thanks for doing this today.
Dude, this was a pleasure. This is a great chat. This is one of my favorite podcasts that I've done.
Hey, it's Ben again. Thanks for listening today. To be completely honest, it's been really rewarding to have people who listen to the show regularly reach out to me, whether they have a question about training or just to say, hey. So if you haven't done that yet, do it. I'm pretty good about getting back to people, and you can feel free to email me, ben@sorefitness.com, or message me on Instagram @sorefitness. And graciously, I've had some people reach out to me and ask how they can support the show. Number one way that you can support the show if you are a regular listener is just by rating the show. Most apps have a platform where you can actually rate it, and on Apple Podcasts, you can write a review as well. This is super helpful in having other coaches and athletes find the podcast, but also just having it grow and for me to continue to want to put out more and more content. Also, I'm going to be posting more full episodes of The Fitness Movement to our YouTube channel. So if you're someone who actually enjoys seeing my face when I talk, you can head over to YouTube and subscribe if you please. And if you're someone who is watching on YouTube, you have the ability to like our videos, but then you can also comment on the video if you have questions about the episode or if you want to suggest a topic for a future episode. And lastly, if you're someone who really does value what we're putting out, I would encourage you to hire a coach. For me, coaching is the bulk of my job and it's what I believe I do best. So if you're an athlete or a coach looking to up your fitness game, be sure to reach out. You can message me on Instagram @ZorFitness or email me ben@ZorFitness.com. Thanks again for listening today. And as always, stay the course.